for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Peanut allergies have more than quadrupled in the U.S. in the past 15 or so years. To improve the chance of not developing the allergy, doctors have been telling concerned parents to avoid exposing their infants and toddlers to peanuts. But a landmark study in England could reverse that advice. Joining me in the studio to talk about new research on peanut allergies, Dr. Sally Jew Bailey of Georgetown University School of Medicine, and Dr. Hemant Sharma of the Children's National Health System. By phone from London, a lead author of the new study, Dr. Gideon Lack of King's College London. I'm sure many of you have concerns about peanut allergies, perhaps your own or your child's. Give us a call, 800-433-8850. Send an email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And thank you all for joining us.
Pleasure being here.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Lack, I'll start with you as senior author. Tell us a little about the study, how it was conducted, and why you began doing this study.
The reason we conducted the study was that we had started to question the efficacy and wisdom of avoiding peanuts in early childhood to prevent peanut allergy. That was the conventional wisdom. In fact, the guidelines for that were in place for a while and then withdrawn by the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2008 on the grounds that there was not really sufficient evidence to promote avoidance in young children. And while these guidelines were withdrawn, they didn't go so far as to say that babies and young children should eat peanut products. And the result was that most parents were still avoiding peanuts. At least that's the case in my experience in the United Kingdom, where there was a similar shift and guidelines were withdrawn, but children continued to avoid peanuts. We had done an observation in Israel showing that where young babies in Israel were eating peanuts in large quantities from 4 to 7 months of age, the rate of peanut allergy in Israel was only about 10% of what it was in the UK. It was very prevalent in the UK, affecting 1 in 50 children, about 2% of the population. And in the UK, we were avoiding peanuts. So with that in mind, we conducted the LEAP trial that was supported by the Immune Tolerance Network and the NIH. And we enrolled a large group of more than 500 children with severe eczema or egg allergy. We chose this group because we know that they have a very high risk of developing peanut allergy. And we randomized them roughly 50-50 to either receive peanut snacks regularly, as the kids in Israel do, or to avoid them. We followed these children to 5 years of age and then determined their peanut allergy status. And indeed, the results were that eating peanut butter or peanut snacks, such as a snack called Bamba, protected these children against developing peanut allergy.
That's really fascinating because, as you said earlier, the guidelines had been to avoid peanuts in very young children. But what you're saying is that avoidance may actually have made the situation worse.
I certainly believe that it could have contributed in part to the increasing prevalence of peanut allergy over the past couple of decades. However, I don't think that's the whole story. I think there are other reasons as well with changes in the environment. And the other main reason I think that peanut allergy has been on the rise, the other main reason, as well as avoiding peanuts, is the rise in eczema. And there's a close link between early eczema in babies and the development of peanut allergy.
Tell me what eczema looks like in young children.
Well, it's eczema in the first year of life, especially in the first 6 months of life, that is associated with subsequent development of peanut allergy. And this eczema will usually manifest as a red, dry, scaly rash on the face or anywhere on the limbs, actually. It can involve the trunk. The skin is generally very dry. It looks dry. It's flaky. It feels dry to the touch. It's pink. When it's very severe, it can start to ooze or crust. But generally, you have patches of redness with dry skin, flaky skin, and it's typically itchy, so the babies will tear at their skin or scratch their skin. But the very early stages are usually manifest just as very dry skin.
And how might that be related to peanut allergy?
Well, that's a good question. I would say we do not know for certain, but the hypothesis that I and others have entertained, and I would say there's growing circumstantial evidence for this hypothesis, is that peanut allergy does not develop by eating peanuts. We know that now definitely. And about 80 to 90% of children who develop peanut allergy manifest on their first known reaction to peanut. Therefore, if peanut allergy is not developing by consumption, one has to ask the question, where did the body first meet peanut in order to develop allergy? And the hypothesis is that these babies with broken down skin are exposed to peanut molecules in their environment. And by being exposed to peanut molecules, I mean their parents or elder brothers or sisters are eating a peanut butter sandwich, then picking them up or kissing them, and therefore transferring peanut to their inflamed skin. In eczema, the skin is very porous, the barrier is broken down, and these molecules penetrate through the skin. And typically when proteins enter through the skin, an allergic-type response evolves to sort of reject the protein, so to speak. We think the body might be fooled into seeing these foreign proteins, molecules of peanut coming through the skin, as it would respond to a parasite. And very often in parasitic infections, these sorts of allergic immune responses are observed. So it's, and in fact, we see that 90% of cases of eczema are in babies with eczema. 90% of cases of peanut allergy occur in infants with eczema, typically with eczema that starts in the first 6 months of life. So, sorry, that's a bit of a long-winded answer.
No, but that's fine. That's fine. That's very interesting. But, you know, I find myself wondering about the relationship between eczema, namely that broken, porous skin, and, for example, allergies to eggs or fish or dairy products. Is there sort of a concomitant manner of entry of allergy there?
Well, that's an important question. I think that is a distinct possibility, or even likelihood, I should say, but the evidence is not as good as for peanut, simply because it hasn't been researched as well at the moment. So we do know, however, that egg and milk allergy are also associated with early aggressive eczema in young infants, and it is very common for egg and milk and peanut allergies to coexist in the same babies in the first year of life, despite these food proteins not being structurally similar at all. And those are all potent allergens, namely peanut, cow's milk, and egg, and it is certainly possible that all three penetrate through the skin. As I said, we have better evidence for peanut simply because we and others have been doing some studies. For example, Dr. Helen Brough, who works in our department here at King's College London, has shown that babies who go on to develop peanut allergy have higher levels of peanut protein in the household dust at birth when they are born.
Interesting. Dr. Gideon Lack, he is professor at King's College London, lead investigator of the peanut allergy study published recently in the New England Journal of Medicine. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, you'll hear from others who are interested and indeed concerned about the new study and what it could mean. Stay with us.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. From the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, working to improve the quality of people's lives by supporting the performing arts, the environment, medical research, and child well-being. Information is available at ddcf.org. And from the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children, both in and out of school. More information is available at wallacefoundation.org.
Welcome back. We're talking about a new study on peanut allergy in children, an allergy that has increased dramatically over the last 10 years. Here with me in the studio, Dr. Sally Jew Bailey. She is at the Georgetown University School of Medicine. Also, Dr. Hemant Sharma. He is at the Food Allergy Program of the Children's National Health System. And on the phone with us from London, Dr. Gideon Lack, professor at King's College London, lead investigator of the peanut allergy study published very recently in the New England Journal of Medicine. I do invite your calls, your comments. We've already had a great number of emails. We'll try to get to as many of your calls, questions as possible. But first to you, Dr. Sharma, you were present when Dr. Lack made his presentation, in Houston recently?
Yes, it was at the American Academy of Asthma, Allergy, and Immunology annual meeting. And on Tuesday, when Dr. Leck presented these findings to thousands of us in the audience, you could literally hear a pin drop, because we've been waiting for years, knowing that the LEAP study was ongoing, for the final findings, and have been looking for further evidence from specifically a clinical trial such as Dr. Leck has conducted that will help guide our decisions with patients that we treat. So this is truly groundbreaking, and all of us in the allergy community have been awaiting these results with great anticipation.
Dr. Bailey, to you, how dangerous can a peanut allergy actually be?
Well, peanut allergy can actually cause a severe anaphylactic reaction, and that means that you can have anything from redness, hives, difficulty breathing, with inflammation in your airways, your blood pressure dropping. And we do know that about 150 deaths occur per year from food allergies, the majority of which are actually from peanuts.
So would this mean, in your practice as assistant professor of pediatrics at Georgetown University, are you going to change what you tell parents of very young children on the basis of this study?
Well, I think this is a very exciting study, and as Dr. Sharma mentioned, this is going to give us another tool in the way that we hopefully treat our patients with peanut allergies. I think one of the cautions that we need to look at is how we identify patients who would be potential candidates for treatment like this. Obviously, we don't want patients to go out there and think that it's safe to start feeding their infants peanuts right away, and also we need to look at for how long do our patients need to be on this type of therapy, and about how much should they be taking. Obviously, we know the data from Dr. Lack's study that showed that the amounts that the patients had, and this was a five-year study, so for 5 years, patients were ingesting peanuts 3 times a week. Other allergists believe that possibly we could do it with less and maybe for a shorter amount of time. So we're eager to find out what the data shows, but we need to really identify who's a low-risk patient, who's a high-risk patient. If a patient has high risk, they may be a candidate, but we need to evaluate and make sure that they haven't already been sensitized and that they aren't already allergic to peanuts.
Now, here's an interesting email from Beth in St. Louis. She says, my sister-in-law is very allergic to peanuts. What are the chances her children would have that same allergy? Dr. Sharma.
Yeah, so this is a great question, and we don't know the exact answer from parent to child, but if we correlate first-degree relatives from studies involving fraternal twins, we know that if one twin has peanut allergy, the other has about an 8% chance of also having peanut allergy, and that is higher than the general population risk. In the United States, for example, right now, peanut allergy affects over 2% of children, and so it does increase the risk, but it doesn't make it a certainty. Certainly, first-degree relatives are at higher risk. And in Dr. Lack's study, this actually was a high-risk population of children because they had either eczema, severe eczema, or an egg allergy. And so I think that the findings actually are quite helpful in the clinical setting for those of us that treat infants who are at higher risk for going on to develop peanut allergy.
So do you believe that we're going to see a quick change in pediatricians' recommendations to patients?
I think that there will be certain things that we can recommend immediately.
Such as
if we have a child who fits very similar criteria to the children in Dr. Lack's study, namely that they had a heightened risk for going on to develop peanut allergy because they had severe eczema and or egg allergy, that is a child that if we had a discussion with the parents about these findings and said, listen, in this clinical trial, the parents were instructed to introduce peanut at about 2 grams, approximately 3 times a week.
2 grams.
Two grams of peanut protein. And so that would equate in this study to either peanut butter or bamba, which was used. It's an Israeli snack that consists of corn puffs mixed with peanut butter. And so in that amount, we would know that in Dr. Lack's study, we observed a very significant decrease in the rate of going on to develop peanut allergy. And I think that the academies, such as the American Academy of Pediatrics, should definitely look closely at these findings and consider changing its most recent recommendation from 2008, which really didn't state when to introduce peanuts. It just said, don't necessarily delay.
Dr. Lack, how quickly do you think the pediatric community might react?
Well, I think that is going to depend very much from country to country and will also depend on whether peanut allergy is a problem in that particular country. It is not a problem in all countries. In the countries where it is highly prevalent, like in the UK and the US, affecting about 1 in 50 children, I think the public health bodies, the professional bodies, will be revising the data very closely. One of the important things about our trial was we didn't want the doctors and public health bodies looking at this just to take our conclusions, but to be able to analyze and examine the data themselves. So all the raw data in this study is on a website run by the ITN called TrialShare, and people can actually, at their own desks, reanalyze the data and come to their own conclusions. So I think there's going to be a fair amount of that. My own conclusion from the data that I've seen is that children who are at risk, and that includes children even with mild eczema, should be assessed as soon as possible, ideally early in the fourth month of life, and the parents should be offered a skin test, and if the skin test is negative, the child should be encouraged to eat peanut products regularly, as in the LEAP study. If the skin test is positive, then the first feed of peanuts should be supervised in the clinical setting by the healthcare person, be it a doctor or a nurse. If the skin test is positive, certainly should be a doctor. And then if the child does not react, the child should continue to eat peanuts.
Interesting. Dr. Lack, here is an email from Leslie who says all this about peanuts is great, but what about tree nuts or other allergies? Do you see similarities with other allergies? Dr. Lack.
Well, that's a great question and a tough question to answer. While it stands to reason that other foods that cause allergies should be no different, and we ought to be able to prevent them in the same way, there's always great danger in making assumptions in medicine and in public health recommendations. Now, I think it is most likely that the same applies for tree nuts. Very possibly egg, but I really can't say about egg. And milk may be completely different. There's some evidence actually from a study in Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology by Dr. Itzhak Katz suggesting that milk may need to be introduced much earlier if we want to induce tolerance. Different food allergies do behave in different ways. So I think we're going to need more data to make firm recommendations about other foods. I should stress that the EAT study, that's EAT as in to eat, is a study that is coming to its end soon. It's a study that we are conducting of 1,303 children who are either, half of them are exclusively breastfed until the age of 6 months. The other are exclusively breastfed till 3 months, and then they have egg, milk, peanut, wheat, fish, and sesame introduced into their diet between 3 and 4 months of age, whilst, of course, continuing to breastfeed. And when these children are 3, we will evaluate the total allergic burden with respect to food allergies in both the avoidant and consuming population, and that will give us more evidence on those other foods. That study we expect to be published in about a year, and hopefully that will, you know, that will give a better answer to the person who sent you that email.
Now, here's another one that I think represents the thinking of lots of people. It's from Trey in Charlotte, North Carolina, who says, it seems as though I had never heard of peanut allergies until about 25 years ago. What happened, Dr. Sharma?
Well, Trey is absolutely correct that we know from studies investigating the prevalence of peanut allergy that it actually in the U.S. has more than quadrupled in the past approximately 15 years. And so we don't exactly know why that is, but we know that there is this increasing prevalence. And as Dr. Lack had mentioned, one of the potential contributing factors could have been these delayed introductions of allergenic foods such as peanut. And if we look at other factors, certainly there may have others, other things that have contributed to this. At the Academy meeting, there was a lot of discussion as well about the what's called the microbiome, the kinds of bacteria that we all have present inside of our gut or our gastrointestinal tract. And that may also play into the increased prevalence of food allergy over the past several years.
Dr. Bailey.
Well, we know that allergies in general have been increasing. We've seen it with asthma. We've seen it with environmental allergies. And food allergies in general has also doubled. So it's not a surprise. But what's surprising is that peanut is actually increasing at a faster rate than other food allergens.
And one has to wonder, why have peanuts themselves simply become so much more prevalent in our diets, or are there certain regions of the world, certain regions of this country, where peanuts are simply more prevalent?
And we don't know exactly, but we know that there are maybe some contributing factors. We know there's a difference that there's a lower rate of peanut allergy in countries like China, where peanuts tend to be boiled. And in this country, we actually tend to roast our peanuts, which seems to heighten their allergenicity.
How fascinating. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We have many callers, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Let's go first to Cape Coral, Florida. Malka, you're on the air.
Hi, Diane. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Go right ahead, please.
I was curious. I was born and raised in Israel. I raised two children who are now Marines in America. And I raised them eating bamba. I was raised eating bamba. I ate bamba while they were in utero. I came to America, and I gave birth to a child here. And I also fed the child bamba and ate it while in utero. To my surprise, this new child has allergies. So I was wondering, could a geographical location cause allergies?
Dr. Sharp.
Well, you know, there's a few things. So Dr. Lack's study that looked at the rates of peanut allergy in Israel versus the UK among children of similar ancestry actually found that in Israel the rates were 10 times lower. And one of the major differences in terms of eating patterns was bamba, as you allude to, which is a snack that is extremely common, introduced early in childhood in Israel, whereas in the UK and other countries such as the US, there have been much more delayed introduction of peanut. We don't exactly understand why some children develop peanut allergy versus others. It's likely multifactorial. And so the age at which peanut is introduced may not be the only single factor that determines the development of peanut allergy. But from Dr. Lack's findings, it certainly seems to be a very important factor.
Dr. Lack, do you want to add to that?
Well, actually, I would ask a question to the person who just called in, and that the third child who developed multiple allergies, who had eaten bamba in childhood, did that child develop peanut allergy or just other food allergies?
And I'm afraid that caller is no longer on the line, but...
Okay. Well, because she didn't mention peanut allergy, and at the moment we're analyzing the data, but there's no reason to believe that eating peanuts would necessarily protect you against egg, milk, and other allergies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it could be that that child had developed other food allergies. Sometimes children do start, and in fact in our study there was a group of children who started eating peanut and then had to stop because of reactions. It was a small group, but nevertheless that was the case. So this treatment isn't necessarily going to work for everybody, and as Dr. Sharma said, there may be other factors at play as well, particularly in certain individuals.
Dr. Bailey, what will you do to find out whether an infant is at high risk for developing allergies?
Well, we know that it's interesting to see that our patients who come to us with a child who may potentially have a food allergy aren't aware that there's risk factors there. Lots of times this is the first child who actually has a food allergy, and most parents will say to us that they didn't realize they were at risk. So evaluation definitely and skin testing is important.
All right, short break here. We'll be right back.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Carbonite, providing secure backup and recovery for businesses and homes. Since 2005, Carbonite has backed up more than 500 billion files, from email servers to family photos. Learn more at carbonite.com. From Cleveland Clinic, where over 23,000 people traveled for heart care last year. Same-day appointments are available. More at clevelandclinic.org/heart. And from the National Endowment for the Arts, Art Works.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, for this month's Reader's Review, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll. 2015 marks the 150th birthday of this whimsical classic. To celebrate, a discussion of what Alice finds down the rabbit hole. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Many of you have been asking about breastfeeding and whether peanuts can be passed through breast milk. Dr. Bailey.
Well, we know that food does go through, unfortunately, in the breast milk to the baby, and especially in patients where if the mother is ingesting peanuts, yes, the baby is getting exposed. If the baby has no issues with eczema or any other atopy, I think it's fine. The concern that we have is once a child has a peanut allergy and has eczema, you can actually see that when the mother ingests and the baby's consuming the breast milk, that they may actually have a reaction. So again, evaluating the child early to see if they're at risk or if they've already developed peanut allergy is going to be important as to whether or not they should continue to be exposed.
And Dr. Sharp, I gather you have introduced this study into your own family situation.
I have. And so we have three children under the age of five. And oftentimes...
You don't get much sleep.
We don't. But, oftentimes patients will ask, you know, what to do in their own situation. What would you do if this was your child,
sure.
Doc? And I tell them, in my children, we introduced peanut and other potential allergens before the age of one, very early on. And that was in advance of having Dr. Lack's findings. I'm so grateful now that we finally have a clinical trial that shows that this observational finding previously is indeed helpful and protective in the development of peanut allergy.
And Dr. Lack, we've also had many questions about the implications of this study on the nutritional guidelines for pregnant women. What would you say to them?
I've never been in favor of manipulating the diet of pregnant women. I mean, there are certain things obviously they shouldn't do, like having unpasteurized cheeses. But other than that, there is no evidence to support changing the diet of a pregnant woman. I don't think even of the woman while she is breastfeeding. And we can see all sorts of correlations that don't imply causality. I mean, it's very interesting, for example, there are a few studies showing that mothers who eat more peanuts during the last few months of pregnancy, or indeed while the baby is breastfeeding, that the baby has an increased risk of peanut allergy in those circumstances. And the conclusion has been, and I think that's a spurious conclusion, that maternal consumption during pregnancy and during breastfeeding is the cause. But in fact, what we know is that a mother who consumes a lot of peanuts during breastfeeding and during the last few months of pregnancy is a mother who eats a lot of peanuts in general in the home. And if she's eating a lot of peanut butter, it's likely that the husband is and the older children are, which means there's a lot of peanut in the home environment. And it's this environmental peanut that we think is important for developing the allergy, not what the mother is transmitting through her breast milk or bloodstream to the baby. The other side of this, too, which I think is very important, is the guilt aspect. I keep saying mothers specialize in feeling guilty about everything as far as their children are concerned. And it's really quite upsetting to see a mother coming in to clinic convinced that she is the cause of her child's peanut allergy, which really isn't the case. There's no evidence, no solid evidence, and I believe there's evidence to refute it, that the mother's diet is the cause of the allergy.
Dr. Sharma, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I wanted to comment on this concept that Dr. Lack is referring to, in that observational studies can many times lead to incorrect conclusions because you have these confounding factors that look like they're contributing in a causal fashion towards the outcome, but they really aren't. And that's why Dr. Lack's study is so groundbreaking in that it is a clinical trial. It's a randomized clinical trial that removes the effect of those confounding factors and really gets us closer to this idea of causation or causality.
All right, to Jackson, New Jersey. Patty, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Surely.
I was wondering if any of these tests or examinations include a comparison of GMO peanuts and non-GMO peanuts?
Dr. Lack, do you want to comment?
Okay, well, I stand to be corrected, but to my knowledge, there are not GMO products out there on the market. I may be wrong. Even if that were the case, though, there is no evidence that a food that is a GMO is in any way more allergenic than a food that isn't a GMO. There's no good reason for that. And certainly, as far as it comes to other foods which are on the market, which are GMOs, we haven't seen a rise in those specific food allergies.
All right. And Patty, you had another question?
Yes, I was also going to ask if the vaccination schedule, is that taken into consideration, the increased amount of vaccines?
Dr. Lack.
The question, I believe, is whether increased vaccinations or increased uptake of vaccinations in the past decades could have led to the increase in allergies. It's a possibility. I don't think it's likely. Depending on the country you're in, between 5 and 10% of the population may not have had any of the childhood vaccines. And in my clinical impression, and this is not a clinical trial, I don't see a specific association. There have been some studies reporting that children who don't have their vaccines at all are less likely to have allergies. But generally, families where vaccination is declined may also have different lifestyles as well. They may eat different types of food. They may avoid antibiotics more. And it becomes difficult to say what the causal factor is. I would say as yet we don't have evidence that a vaccination is a cause.
All right. We'll go to Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Diane. Thank you for having this discussion that is perplexing and essential. I'd like to know if there is any direct link between any kind of food allergies and the autoimmune disease psoriasis. I was seriously ill with a food milk allergy as an infant, and now I'm in my 70s, and it took 35 years until I had my first bout of psoriasis, and I've just not been able to find any conclusive answers.
Are there any, Dr. Sharma?
Great question. I actually am not aware of any linkages. As Dr. Lack was speaking about earlier, this idea regarding the integrity of the skin barrier and foods having access to the bloodstream certainly may be part of the causal pathway for the development of food allergy, but I'm not aware of anything directly associating early childhood food allergy with later onset of psoriasis.
Dr. Lack?
I would say the same. It is very unusual for psoriasis to present early in childhood. It's made more usually a later onset condition, and at least my belief is that it is the breakdown in the skin barrier in infancy that leads to the development of allergies, at least with respect to peanuts. So we don't see much psoriasis in early infancy or childhood. In fact, it's rare in infancy. And therefore, I can't really see how it would lead or cause food allergies. Having said that, I don't know of any good studies looking specifically at the association between psoriasis and food allergies.
All right, here's an email from Julia in Indiana who says, my daughter is 8 months old. Peanut allergy is something I've worried about. We currently allow her to try many different kinds of food, but we have avoided peanuts with extreme care. How would the research suggest that we introduce peanuts, and how can we be prepared in case she has a bad reaction? Dr. Bailey.
I think that they're doing a great thing by letting her have a variety of different foods. I think one of the things that we need to do is look at, again, the risk factor. Does she have eczema? Is she coming from an atopic family? We know that a lot of our patients are surprised when their child's diagnosed with a food allergy. And what we found in our patient population was that about 3% of our patients who have a food allergy have a parental history of food allergy, but about 70% actually have parents who have environmental allergies. So if there's strong history of atopy, that may be something to consider also as a risk factor.
How do you test an infant for allergy?
There's actually two ways of testing. The easiest is actually a skin test, which is a small little scratch with the actual protein from the peanut to see if that child is allergic. If she's allergic, she'll actually develop a small hive or wheal, and that's what Dr. Lack's study was referring to, where if there was a wheal size that he mentions of 4 millimeter or less, the patients were allowed to be a part of the study. If they had a reaction greater than 4 millimeters, then they already have a peanut allergy.
So that would mean stay away from introducing peanuts?
Perhaps. And so,
as
Dr. Lack mentioned, there's an important next step would be to perform what's called an oral food challenge, because the skin testing and even the blood testing, the other form of testing, can sometimes be inaccurate. You can end up with false positive and also false negative results. But in the case where that initial skin test is positive but small, it would be an important next step to perform a food challenge to determine whether that child is truly allergic or not.
All right, let's go to Anne in Houston, Texas. You're on the air.
Oh, I listen to you regularly. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
It was over 45 years ago that I read an article saying that they were starting to encounter a fungus on some peanuts and not others, and that this fungus could be discerned under a certain type of light. I don't remember which kind of light it was. I never heard anything about any kind of attempt to screen out the infected peanuts. So I'm thinking that the peanut allergy may be more complex than a simple allergy, because I also know that a fungus infection on the skin looks very much like the description he gave of the rash of the children who are more likely to get peanut allergies.
What do you think, Dr. Sharma?
I think you raise an interesting point in that it may not be the allergen, the peanut allergen alone. There could be other factors that modify the risk of going on to develop a food allergy. And I had alluded to it earlier that this idea of the microbiome or the diversity of the kinds of bacteria that we have within our bodies, particularly within our gastrointestinal tract, may also modify the relationship between a food allergen being exposed and then going on actually to develop that food allergy.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Now to Orlando, Florida. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Diane. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks.
I have an anecdotal story that may or may not help some other callers out there to, try something on their own with their doctor's consent, of course. I was 9 years ago introducing to my infant, well, a four-month-old, when you're starting to introduce new foods, to my son while I was breastfeeding. I breastfed till month 13. And I introduced tree nuts because I was trying to introduce superfoods to his diet, and it was through crushing the nuts up, adding water, and we called that nut milk. And that's a real easy way to introduce it to, because I'm sure some people are scratching their heads trying to figure out how do I get peanuts into my child when you don't want them to choke. And my child actually did have eczema. He battled with eczema till about the age of four-ish, maybe three, but maybe four. And I find this all really interesting. He never developed a peanut allergy. I'm not quite a fan of peanuts because of the fat content, and I just found tree nuts to be a little more healthy in my knowledge. So that's all I had to add, just some breastfeeding and how to feed a nut to a baby.
All right. Thanks for calling. What do you think, Dr. Sharma?
Well, one thing that I thought of as I was listening to your experience with your child is this idea regarding how what form of the peanut to introduce. And obviously, there is this concern for choking risk. And in a very young child, say a four-month-old, you may not want to feed actual peanut, raw peanut itself, because of that choking risk. And it would certainly be preferable to use something like peanut butter or perhaps this Bomba, as was used in Dr. Lack's trial.
And even with peanut butter, we have to caution that it is quite sticky. So
it can stick to the mouth.
And in the throat as well. So certainly we don't have Bomba readily available, but that may be something that we'll start to see on our shelves. But also there's peanut butter flour that actually can be found as well in nutritional stores and in some grocery stores as well. That may be another option that we can potentially mix into baby food or into...
Dr. Lack, I do want to congratulate you and your colleagues on the study. Very briefly, do you foresee a time when there might be a vaccine produced against peanut allergies?
Thank you. And that's again, an interesting question. So if you're talking about a vaccine to prevent peanut allergy, I somehow doubt it. You could argue that early consumption of foods is a form of vaccination, that you are mounting an immune response. So I don't personally believe that the way forward to preventing peanut allergy or indeed other food allergies will be a vaccine.
All right. Dr. Gideon Lack, professor at King's College, London, lead investigator of the peanut allergy study published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Thanks also to Dr. Hemant Sharma of the Children's National Health System and Dr. Sally Jew Bailey of the Georgetown University School of Medicine for informing our listeners so beautifully. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.